This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Facilities Committee. I'm Deb Coughlin, Chair of the Committee, and I am joined by Stephen Albright to my left, who is Vice Chair of the Committee, and Counselor from Ward 2, Mark Laredo, who is Counselor from Ward 7, Vicki Danberg, who is Counselor from Ward 6, and our committee chair, Naomi Khan. It is Wednesday, June 7th, and this is the audio recording as usual. We have a grant of location, which we're going to take up first, and then we're going to be meeting jointly with CS&T. So I'll make that on this one. Item number 140-17 is National Grid Application for Grant of Location in Greenwood Street for new gas main from the existing one to a number 4 Sublin Road. And we are joined by the representative. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Barbara Kelleher, and I am the permanent rep for National Grid. And we do want to do the same
You can just describe the work if you want.
Okay. It is for in front of number 140 and 141 Greenwood, and up until 4 Sutherland. There was nothing there. They were dead ended. Both mains were dead ended. So that we are connecting both dead ended just to increase the capacity on that pipe.
I see. So you're making the gas line continuous.
Correct.
It's not because someone's requesting a new service.
Not at this moment.
Okay.
I'm sure they will.
So this is Ward 8. Does anyone have any questions about it just from the get-go? Oh, here's Councilor Cheryl Lappin, Ward Councilor from Ward 8. We're just picking up the grant of location in Greenwood Street, which is just a continuation of two gas lines just connecting them. No gas service. So, do you have any questions? If anyone is here to speak for or against this petition, or our city engineer, can we hear from him?
Yes. This note of the work is new and moving, green street, late in the summer. So we'd like to get the afternoon to get the afternoon and things like that.
Is this a coordinated effort?
Okay, one is in the right place.
And we are joined by Councilor Gentile, Councilor Lodge from Ward 4. So we're just discussing the grant of location to complete a gas line in Greenwood Street. And Lou Taverna just let us know that the city is planning to mill and overlay the street late in the summer. And so these two are being associated with the gas company to make sure you're working on that event. That's why they're there. It's your request.
Inform them of the roads were not taken. They realized there was a gap in this line, so they want to get this done before.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Any questions
from the committee, Susan? So my question is, I know this wasn't a customer they asked for this. So, but did you notify then the folks in the neighborhood that you were doing the work?
The abutters have been notified, yes.
So all that was done was they were notified. They weren't.
That's correct.
It's a new service. Do you want the service?
I know.
Okay, so I asked Barbara to find out, because it seems there's a discrepancy in information about whether or not the Department of Public Utilities let them ask solicit new customers, and we think maybe they do actually allow it.
Okay.
Oh, really? Barb, I know, but we're going to find out. Barbara's going to check that.
Yes.
Because the DPU says they don't understand why the gas company wouldn't solicit for new customers.
Mm-hmm.
So we look forward to you coming in next time with me.
All right.
So Susan went above and beyond and called the DPU today. Lou?
When Public Works sends letters out notifying them of the million savings, we also notify all the abutters to contact their utility company should they want to connect to gas service water, maybe water, and sewer service replacement. So that letter went out early. Notifying them several times.
Great. So that's already out.
That's already there. Oh, yeah, that.
And will they call the city, or is you to have...
Well, they're calling the water tower, the water, the sewer tower.
Okay.
They won't call us.
Well, I'm just wondering if they'll let the city know, so it's a coordination.
They're not necessarily enough to contact to get it yet.
Okay. So, I'll ask again, if anyone here to speak for or against this permit? This petition? Hearing none, I'll close the public hearing. Carol?
How long do you think this will take?
It is 300 feet.
Okay. And if you pass this, you will be after the you will be 20 days from now.
Applying for a permit. This is
So you should have plenty of time.
Yeah, that's what we're requiring.
Okay.
We have to wait until.
All righty.
So would you like to make a motion to approve? We have a motion to approve. All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you. I'm going to close the hearing back from you on those.
All right. Why?
The customer.
I wrote that right.
Yes, please.
Great.
Thank you. And if you don't happen to come back for it, I'm going to leave
you. I will
survive the
end. Yes, I will. Thank you. I will answer your email.
Thank you.
Now, we're supposed to be meeting with Public Safety and Transportation in a minute.
So what
is 5 minutes next? I'll read it into the
meeting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Item number 182-17 is to appropriate $450,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding additional costs for the Dedham, Manhattan, Brookline Street intersection improvement project, including relocation of utilities and the realigning of Carlson Avenue and Brookline Street. Still coming in 5 minutes.
We'll move the next item.
Let me see. We move on.
I'm just not surprised that I showed how excited I am to the project and happy to see my
board again.
No, thank you. I don't think we want to take up the easement until we pick that item up. How about the abandonment of a portion of a drained easement at 46 and 36 Tamworth Road?
Yeah, Luke Tavares, City Engineer, will speak to that.
Just stay where you are. You're fine. The design of the mayor requesting, in accordance with Massachusetts General Law, Chapter 40, Section 15, that the City Council approves the abandonment of a portion of a city drain easement to the side and rear properties at 36 and 46 Tamworth. Luke?
Yeah, there is an existing drain easement that runs behind the properties of number 36 and 46 Tamworth Road. There was a drain pipe in that easement many, many years ago. The drain pipe has been long abandoned. It was relocated to a new easement between the properties of 36, 46 Tamworth and the street behind it. So there's a new drain relocated in a new easement. We verified by closed circuit television with a camera that drain does not exist. It was removed a long time ago, but yet no one bothered to discontinue the easement. Got a call from the email from the owners of 46. They would like to do an addition, small addition on their house. The easement's in the way. So there was access to abandon the easement in order for them to apply for their permit and put the addition. It doesn't really affect 36, but I figured why not just abandon the entire easement, not just a portion of it. So that's why we're here tonight.
So this is strictly a legal matter.
It's an abandonment of an easement. Yeah, your public facilities have to.
This is the stuff you
said.
We can see that's
I don't know what that is.
It's a plan.
So the process has to be Public Works has to agree that it's abandoned, City Council has to agree that it's abandoned, the mayor has to agree that it's abandoned, and then it's done.
Great.
That's the process.
So, any questions?
I'm still moving forward.
Is it a public hearing?
No. What was this? No public hearing. You know what? I don't know Tamworth. Who owns Tamworth Road?
It's off of Chestnut Street. It's in the. Chestnut Street.
You know what? I'll take a motion from anybody.
I'll move approval.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve from Councilor Danvers. All in favor? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. That takes care of that. Let's see. Are we at 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
You can't take up how much food yet. That's fine. 176-17 is to appropriate $350,000 for the replacement of the Mondo track at East South High School. No? Are they here? Are you here? Not okay.
You're on the quorum.
They can recommend. They can recommend. They can take a vote.
Yeah, I know. Right, but if they have to, you'll have to take another vote in committee.
Right, though.
Okay, no.
And Emily discussing something else, but
there's only two of
them. Where's John Rock? Oh, he's not on the committee.
No, he's not on it. Okay. We are now meeting jointly with the remaining members of Public Safety and Transportation. Would you like to introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, City Ranger, Vice Chairman.
Jim Cody, member of the Public Safety and Transportation.
And your clerk has just walked out.
And the other one has left.
Okay. All right. So we'll start. This is, I've already read it into the record, so. And Councilor Fuller has just arrived, so we now have three members of the S&T. Okay. I think we should hand it over to Kane and let him present this item.
Sure. We're now at 100% design for this. The bid goes out tomorrow to be advertised, and this additional $450,000 is. Now that the final design is complete and the survey is complete, we found some underground structures there, utility structures that need to be moved. Those belong to Verizon as part of that. And then additionally, we're anticipating additional higher increases in the traffic signal equipment themselves. When the bids came in for Harvard Washington, we noticed an increased price in those traffic equipment. So this $450,000 will take us through the end of construction.
Okay, so this is as a result of bids coming in for the
so this is we're at 100% design now.
Yeah.
And at the end of the 100% design, which includes the final survey, the unanticipated things like the utility structures underground that now have to be moved as this is now increased the price for this project.
We didn't know they were there.
Yeah.
We knew they were there.
We knew a few were there, but we didn't know the cost until we were able to get a hold of Verizon and those utilities, so this is a result of that. And then additionally, the consultant that did the design for this was the same consultant that did the design for Harvard Washington. Mm-hmm. When those bids came in, even though they came in under budget, we saw a significant increase in the traffic signal equipment portion of it. So the traffic signal equipment is now going up. It's a higher cost. So as a result, we want to make sure that we're not back here at a later date asking for additional money after the project has started.
So, Mark and then
Are we undergoing any utilities then?
Not on this project, no.
And not because of cost?
Cost, and there aren't any utilities. Most of the utilities are already underground. The gas is underground. The electric is underground through that area within the footprint of the project.
Okay. What about all the other above ground wires?
No.
So this is, because this is really just at the entrance.
Yeah,
I know. It's not along the front of the property, right?
It's actually Mount Ida.
I'm the wrong.
Manhattan, Brookline.
Yeah, never mind.
Does the increase in cost of the signalization because we're upgrading or just because they've gone up in price?
Well, we're upgrading all the traffic and signal equipment out there, but also even the traffic signal equipment, all the newer stuff is now increased in price.
Okay.
Are the utilities we didn't have to move? Because I thought part of the design was to eliminate.
This is mainly the Verizon structure. So the next docket item, we'll read that in for the taking portion of the easement on Mount Ida property. That's where the Verizon docks and everything are, and that's going to be right in the middle of the roadway when we realign that intersection.
Okay, so you're not talking about the one.
We're not talking about the gas and all that that's in the island there.
Okay, good, because we didn't have to. That's
exactly.
Part of the design at Manhattan was that was so we would not have to move utilities. So you're talking about
this is the Verizon duct and everything that's at the cost
right.
And coming out of Mount Ida.
Right.
Anybody else? I'm sorry, this is not a public hearing. So anyone from the S&T? Questions?
Yeah.
Money?
So can we backtrack a little bit? How much money have we already approved for this project?
1.4. This will take it up to 1.8.
It's a large increase.
You take it up to one. Won't take it up to 1.85.
It will take it up to 1.808. Is what we're projecting.
So I am. Based on my experience in Auburndale Square, I am just so down on all of these projects right now that, I just don't have any faith that what we're doing is going to improve the situation. West Newton's going to be a disaster, and now I don't know what we're doing here. It is, trust me, a disaster. All right? And people that know better are afraid to say anything on the record, because of, some of the lobbies that we have around here. But that's a story for another day. So, what are we doing here that's going to make this much better down the road than it is today? When somebody says, because I can't answer that question in Auburndale Square, and I'm just getting the crap beat out of me, pardon my language, about how Auburndale Square has turned out. And I put my faith into the professionals that designed it and told us how much better it was going to be, and it is nothing but a disaster. I know that Ward 3 people get complaints. We get complaints about it every single day. So, and I will acknowledge that Auburndale Square was kind of before your time, all right, design-wise and stuff. But I just don't have any faith in what we're doing and the kind of money that we're spending on these intersections.
I'm going to make a suggestion. We are joined by Nicole Friedman. I don't know if it's fair to ask you about the design of this project. If you're not in the loop here, I'll go to Cheryl.
I can speak to the design. I'm pretty well.
I'm here because I want to talk about the design.
I'm sorry, honey. This is not a public hearing. This has to stay in the committee until we've completed our
Okay. So we came before the committee once, and I don't have the PowerPoint that we presented with me tonight, but if you're familiar with this intersection, this is a very offset intersection. It's rated as the MassDOT top 5% for most crashes at this intersection. So as part of this work, we are realigning that intersection where Carlson, Brookline, and Manhattan come together. By realigning that intersection and squaring it off, that's going to allow better visibility, and you're not going to see these cars competing and passing each other and conflicting when they're trying to make the turns. So that's what this project is going to complete. As a result of that, we're also upgrading the traffic signal equipment out there. So that's what this project is. Just to speak to Councilor Gentile's comment on this, I would recall and remind everyone that the consultant that did the design work for Auburndale Square is no longer working for the city. We have a different consultant in. The same consultant that designed this, that's working on this project, is the same one that did Harvard Washington. And the Harvard Washington bids were actually under what we projected. So we have all the faith and confidence in the world that this consultant and the designer has designed this intersection correctly.
Okay, so, I wanted to just point out that the 1.4 was for two intersections. It was the Dedham Manhattan and the Dedham Brookline Carlson. So that was two intersections. And the one we're talking about now, where we have, where we're going to take some land from Mount Ida in order to shore this up, which is why we had to move the utilities. There were 23 accidents. It literally is on the top 5% of worst intersections. So the 1.4 was for two different intersections.
23 accidents
over 5 years.
Okay. Anybody else? Still nobody from CSNC who asked that? We are joined by Jay Harney, so CSNC has the floor.
Just to ask one question again, which is the Auburndale between the unhappiness is real, were there any lessons learned from that that have been applied here and maybe Nicole can speak to that?
Absolutely. We've learned lots of lessons there. And it's not complete with what we're doing out there. In fact, because we're filling these calls daily with the timing and everything else, we've hired an independent consultant to recommend timing adjustments. They went out there, they took a look at the field and gave us some field recommendations. We've implemented some of those timing changes, and there's additional things they've recommended to us to change. So we're continuously working on this. As Councilor Gentile said, you know, we, none of us in this room from Public Works other than Lou, were here when this project went out. So we really inherited this, but we're doing our best to mitigate a situation that existed prior to us being here. So we're trying to mitigate this. Some of the lessons we learned is to double check, do some peer reviews on these projects and not just trust what the consultants tell us.
Different quality equipment for the signaling?
Yeah, so we're using the latest and the greatest equipment with the signal.
With the signal equipment now. And is that different from what was used in Auburndale?
No, you know, we were told that was the latest and greatest signal equipment. Quite frankly, we just don't know if that consultant had the ability to really do a major project like that. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're no longer here.
Jim?
So I just have a question saying on the changes that made to this point, how did they work out? So were there money quality or how they worked out?
Are you asking, Counselor, about Auburndale or are you asking about this? We haven't made any changes at this point because at this point it's all design phase and absolutely, yeah. We haven't executed anything out there. This is just the design and anticipation to send us out for bid, which goes out for advertising tomorrow.
Michael, another question before your time, before my time, was the one that's done with the reconfiguration of the major, have to put that in there. That was kind of like, well, put that in there.
This will be the final number.
1.808.
Yeah.
But is it 1.4?
That's correct. And we're pretty confident that this is the final number.
But to what Cheryl said, that's two intersections?
Two intersections.
By the fire station as you're coming up to Hampton, where the Hampton and Dedham come together, and then it's down at the other end by Mount Ida where Dedham, Carlton, and Brookline come together. So it's one project, two intersections, and that's a great point too because most of the projects we're doing aren't one intersection, they're multiple intersections involved in one project. So.
There's no money involved in the land.
And I would say I say this all the time, but traffic signal upgrades, realigning roadways, it's not cheap. To do it right, do it correct, it is not. I know it's a lot of money, but it's not cheap to do.
And this is not about moving traffic, it's about safety.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So just one last question, though. I'm going to have some questions in finance. If you had to describe kind of like the nature of the types of accidents that have been happening out there, is there a consistent situation that seems to come up a lot that would solve it?
Yeah, lots of T-bones and T-bone accidents when you're there and the car hits you right in the side, T-bones you. Lots of T-bone accidents. And what's happening is currently the current condition out there, especially when you're traveling towards Brookline on Dedham and you want to turn onto Brookline Street, you've got that left-hand turn there and it's offset, so you have opposing traffic. Everybody's trying to make that through movement and also turn left, so the cars aren't patient with each other. They get out there, they start to turn, and the oncoming traffic can't see them, and boom, they hit them.
So this is somebody going down Devon Street, heading, as you said, towards
Brookline,
or Westlock.
Exactly.
And so they come to that light and it's when they try to take a left to go up Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's most of the accidents there. And then the other additional accidents are when they're coming off Brookline, southbound off Brookline, and they're turning onto Dedham, and they're coming out of Mount Ida onto Carlson, because right now that's opposing traffic, and they're all fighting for jockeying for positions. There's lots of accidents there because those cars, you know, you've got these college kids who are, a lot of them 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who don't have a lot of experience driving. And
so that's the first one, the situation that you described, the people taking a left on the Brookline. What are we doing? We've got a million intersections in the city where people are going to take a left at a light. What are we going to be doing that's going to make that left-hand turn safer?
Well, the problem with this one is, and I don't have a graphic on the screen, but once again, this is an offset intersection. So you've got Dedham here, you've got Carlson over to the right, you've got Brookline to the left. So if you're coming off Carlson, if you want to come out of Carlson, go on the Brookline, you're almost going an L. You come over, you jog to the left, and then you jog back to the right to go across the intersection. So the intersection's offset, which is creating a lot of additional conflict points with turning and moving vehicles. What this will do, which will be the easement portion, is by taking the easement from Mount Ida, we're able to take that intersection, shift it over, and make it more like a plus intersection.
So you are down Brookline and pretty much go straight across if you want to go
exactly. It'll realign it to where it's more as a straight configuration where you're just coming straight and you don't have those conflict points.
There is a lengthy packet of information, but some of it's difficult to get through.
Yeah.
But there isn't one clear picture of the intersection that shows the existing versus the new. I don't know if you can't find it easily, I'll just pass it down here.
Do you know how many pictures I looked at on Auburndale Square?
It does show the realignment very clearly.
And we did have two public meetings.
Yeah.
Two public meetings.
I was going to mention we've been joined by Councilor Yates. And are there any other comments or questions about this? Okay. From engineering, from transportation director, nobody. Okay. So,
motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. All in favor in public facility? It is 6 in favor and 1 abstention. Thank you.
Public safety.
And then the next item we have is related. It's item 108-17. Honor, the mayor recommending that the city of Newton, are we ready?
Yep.
City of Newton take an easement on property owned by Mount Ida College at the southeast corner of the Dedham Street and Carlson Avenue intersections in order to realign Dedham Street, Brookline Street, Carlson Avenue intersection. Mount Ida supports the taking of the easement, and is this, Shane, is this you also?
This is, and then Lou and Nicole may help me out if I need it.
Okay.
So as part of this, as we talked about, to realign that intersection, we need to take a portion of Mount Ida. We've met with them several times in coordination with this project, and they're the ones that actually suggested that we take the easement to do it. We do have a letter in your packet from the president, Barry Brown, supporting this project and supporting the easement. This is simply they're giving the easement to us for free. We will have a license agreement with them to allow their signage to be replaced to the new green area, which will be within our right of way, but we'll have a license agreement with them because it will relocate their sign. But this easement is given to us for free, and we don't have to do a eminent domain on it, which is very great.
So from a law and surveying point of view, it's a right of way easement.
taking. It's not a land taking. We don't know, we're not going to own the land. We simply have the right of way easement taking. So there's no fee involved. And my neither is a willing party giving up the land. With allowed, if you look at the plan closely, with allowed a small buffer between the right of way easement and the abutting property on Dedham Street, I don't quite understand, that has to do with the zoning and setback rules and everything, so that the existing property is still compliant with zoning regulations, so that's why there's a little bit of an offset of the easement along the adjacent property, that's what that is. So. And the other thing is, every street in Newton is laid out with a curved right of way, but in this case, I need to raise it on myself. We can't create a curb there at the northeast point. We can't create a curb there, so I'm waiving my own requirements, if you will, to create a curb there at that point. It just comes in at 8 or 9 degree angle.
Okay. Just a question about who owns what. You're taking from Mount Ida. Mount Ida is giving that property.
Correct.
Does Mount Ida own the property that's accreting on this side?
Well, Mount Ida owns the other side as well, but there's no reason to take that. We don't need to take that. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right. So
they own both sides.
They're losing property on this side and they're accreting property on
this side. No. We're not doing that. We're not changing the right of way. No. They own both strips of land abutting the existing right-of-way, if you will. We're not taking the other one, but we're not shifting the right-of-way either. We're just adding to the right-of-way. But there's no shift in right-of-way.
I see. Okay.
So the roadway may shift, but the right-of-way stays
the same. So our right-of-way stays on this line.
Yeah, right-of-way stays the same, the roadway stays.
Got it. Okay, so that's very nice of them to be doing that if they're not accreting on the other side.
And that's a good question.
So this is like trying to turn this in. So they will still own the property. And
they own the land.
Right away.
They own the land below the
okay.
There's a couple of, I think, they're sellers. Minor calls. So are those being shifted over?
Yeah. Those will be relocated as part of their signage. They want to relocate that sign and upgrade it anyway, do new lighting and everything, so they're going to move that signage to the new green area, which is on the plans, and that'll be the licensing agreement, so that will now be within our right-of-way, so we'll create a licensing agreement to allow them to...
Are we paying for the movement? For the movement?
No, they're doing the movement themselves. They're paying for all that. We're just doing a license agreement.
But speaking of payments, what's going on with Verizon? What are we paying? We're paying them something?
We have to pay for the utility relocation since this isn't in their effort to relocate it. They have no vested interest in relocating the vault or anything. So we're requesting them to move it so we can do this project.
So do we know how much that is?
We've estimated $40,000.
That's all?
No.
So we have to cut a check to Verizon.
So they can do the move.
Yeah.
But we get the land for free.
Well, it's not their land.
No, we get Mount Ida's land for free. So someone would have to move. They're going to have that move.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Another motion to approve. All in favor? Is 6 in favor? We have an extension or? Yep, 1 extension. That packet belongs to Nadia next to the
Dublin.
So we can get back to the there you go. All right.
Does she also want this?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much. And now we have, I guess we just have to do also the same item 180-17, which was out of the mayor's request for authorization to alter and widen portions of the Homer Street right of way in order to proceed with several safety improvements and pedestrians, including curb extensions, rectangular rapid flashing beacons, and crosswalk relocation.
So we will assist you on this one as well.
Okay, are we skipping the evening at Hamlet?
We did that.
Nice! Ha ha ha.
It was thrilling. Percolating discussion.
In fact, I don't believe I introduced the fact that you were joined by Barbara Bruce-Ugleton. I think I might have skipped you. We've been in the middle of our conversation. So,
So the city has received a grant from the Federal Highway as part of Federal Highway Safety Improvement Program. It's administered through MassDOT. And as part of this, we're doing improvements within our right-of-way. MassDOT does all of these improvements. It doesn't cost us anything if the city is part of the grant. They come in there. They come in. They do all the bid packets. They pay for everything. They do the construction in the street. As part of this, one of the locations that we identified we want safety improvements is the crossing that everyone's familiar with here, right outside of the parking lot where we all park here, the director's lot. Those two crosswalks over to the library where no one stops, because I've almost got clipped a few times. We've identified both those for rapid rectangular flashing beacons. We're going to do some bump outs there, have them do some bump outs to narrow it down a little bit, shorter crossing, rapid rectangular flashing beacons. As part of this grant, though, the Federal Highway requires that all of this be done within the city's right-of-way, even though it's library land, which is city-owned, and City Hall. Everything has to be within the right-of-way, so this easement is taking the portions that would go onto the City Hall property a little bit and onto the library a little bit and putting it within our right-of-way so that they can actually do this grant.
So we're creating additional roadway right-of-way, if you will, so that the equipment and the new engine ramp would fit within the proposed roadway right-of-way. They will not install this equipment or install the leading ramps on library land or on City Hall campus land. That's why we're taking these easements and not to make them part of the roadway right-of-way. That's from a survey point of view.
So this is essentially a very touchy site.
Essentially
a very technical issue here, because the plan is in place. It's just to allow us to facilitate it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is this the same kind of light that we have currently at Washington and Harvard?
No, it's not.
Thank you for that.
If you're familiar with, I don't know if you ever traveled through Wellesley, but where the T is on Washington Street, the commuter rail location on Washington Street, right there, the new, it's the, they're low to the ground, they're very low to the ground, they're right in the line of sight for where a driver is. You push the button and they flash, and there's various flashing patterns, it's never the same pattern. So it's right in the line of sight for the driver, unlike Harvard, Washington, where it's 20 feet in the air.
Is it like a Waverly Avenue Bigelow? Is it like that one?
Yes. Yeah. But improved technology. The latest.
That works for
the latest version of it. It's not just that flashing yellow. It's like strobes on a police car, if you will.
So the problem with Harvard, it wasn't just that it was up there.
It was
it flashed for a long time.
Yep.
And you're standing there and it's flashing and there's nobody in the crosswalk, so it's people attempting to go. So I hope I don't know if that will be the same instance here where they'll still be flashing and people...
Things will be programmed in such a way that when the button pushes, it'll flash for, we'll say if it's a 30-foot crossing, a typical pedestrian can move 2 feet per second, so you take 2 feet divide that into 30, so they'll flash for 15 seconds to allow it enough time for a pedestrian. And we have the ability to adjust that
to a
longer or to a shorter, depending
on the
thing. I think we should encourage our pedestrians to walk with us.
Before I call in, Nicole, you look like you wanted to add something. You're all set? Okay. All right. And Barbara?
Thank you. So you can re-identify that as if you're going to get the grant, here's where we go.
Yeah.
And is there, other than obviously we're all very aware of that spot, have there been accidents? Like, is this really the top of the list?
There haven't been any accidents that I'm aware of, Nicole. I don't know if you have but I know there's been a lot of near misses. Mm-hmm. We talk frequently about it in committee meetings, I know daily, and red flags.
it at least comes up once or twice a month in red flag meetings where, hey, I almost got put today. And I tell you from my personal experience, there's been at least three times where I'm a big target, and I've been in the middle of that intersection and cars flying through there.
You better watch out for the cars.
Yeah. And that's with my safety vest on.
Are you done?
No. Not yet, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Since there wasn't any picture, are we doing exactly what is now, but just adding
there,
it?
I don't have it with me.
Something
I do have a schematic.
There is a map.
It's hard to read. I have a schematic with me. You can see there. So we're going to bump out a little bit to narrow the crossing. We're actually moving the crosswalk to a more desired crossing line.
Actually, on the matter of this drawing, I did find this difficult to read. I don't usually say it in font, but I've seen markings in the street. Were those preparatory to this, and I can't tell honestly by looking at this, but this isn't what's already there.
Yeah. So the markings in the street were preparatory. There's been lots of discussion around this through the various departments here, through engineering, through the transportation, even with Jeannie Fairley as our ADA coordinator. So lots of discussions about like markings in the street or what we had originally proposed with it. And so Lou actually has some larger plans there if you'd like to take a look at it, but we are moving those crosswalks to a more desired crossing point.
Does that show existing and proposed?
It shows me. This is really for the surface.
So can you show us where the new ones are?
The old crosswalk is one.
Okay.
The old crosswalks here, the new crosswalks from the over here.
You want to hold it up?
The old crosswalks here, the new ones here, and the old one is the corner here.
Yeah.
And we're going to move it over here.
Oh, so they're going to be so
don't we have a rule about having 300 feet between crosswalks or something like that?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry.
It's upside down to me.
Oh,
we're sure a minimum number of feet between crosswalks.
It's okay, we're good on that.
No,
because we've got
to
be
fast.
Are you
up on
that before now?
We're moving it to line up with.
So our that's City Hall driveway. What's the correct street here? That's exit from the library.
It's from the library.
Okay.
And this is the top desire line that you
need.
Okay. Kind
of right in the same spot, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, currently it's on the other corner.
Yeah.
But the bus stop. And we just got it. We spent a lot of time thinking, you know, exactly where we're going. Not quite to
come back.
Let me
move.
Okay.
There's the parking lot. So where's the other one going?
It's still connecting when you go out that side of the bridge. It's still in that thing.
So this one's moving from the far corner to the near corner here.
Okay.
And then this one's moving from here over to here. It's the more desired crossing point for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're so close together. That one
thing. I know. We thought a lot about it. You know, one property should we put it to one?
Right in the center.
Yeah, we got one.
And what we really felt like in the
Okay, so on that map you showed us, that's drawn for the easement takings, but
yeah, that's the easement takings. That's not the design drawing.
So it doesn't. Does it show the proposed radius at the end of City Hall Drive, or does it show the current radius? I just can't tell. I thought you were, and I don't think I'm seeing that on there.
This is a land taking drawing.
So that's an existing condition with an overlay.
Right, it doesn't have the proposed.
Okay, so are we going to see the drawing of the...
The bump out for all the drawings here. Yeah, right. You have to go on that little thing.
I can't see them on here.
They are...
So the curb,
the
curving here at the library, actually I'm sorry, at this point here, because this is such a wide, the curb is going to be extended out here to shorten this crossing across the City Hall Drive. And then looking at the map here, it looks like along this section here, the curb will come out some to shorten this crossing here across Homer. So it's basically kind of in this section here.
Are these high-use crosswalks?
Absolutely.
Are they? Yeah. So is it mostly City Hall people going back and forth?
It's people parking at City Hall, going to libraries, like Brooklyn.
We would not be doing this part next door,
to Jeff's question, we're coming out of the main entrance to the library. I'm not sure whether you consider the main entrance the one that comes out to the parking lot or the one that comes out on Center Street.
Okay,
that was my question. The main entrance has a driveway. It's got a little drive-in. Is there a crosswalk? There's no crosswalk in the middle there. You have to walk all the way either to the right or all the way to the left. Does it make sense to have a crosswalk in front of the library?
There are a lot of
jaywalking happens coming out of that main entrance to get to the other side of the street. They just walk right out of the main entrance and cross the street.
But putting a crosswalk there would encourage behavior that in this case that I can't imagine the case. I mean, you're coming around that corner, you've got a green light, and all of a sudden you're going to see one of those walking things that makes no sense.
But it also, it admits the fact that people tend to cross there and not walk to the corner.
From a transportation perspective, and from a safety perspective, looking at this, we would definitely not recommend a crosswalk anywhere in between here and the little proposal of the city for the fact that what Councilor Ray Dorito just said, you're coming around this corner here and you're not expecting a crosswalk here, so you don't want to encourage people there.
Okay.
The least tiers are protected because when you push the button, the whole intersection shuts down, they're protected here. And they'll have a level of protection at these trees that will be installed with the rest of the
signs
will be there.
As in children.
So actually, to Vicki's point, I understand why you're wanting to be here, but obviously if you take a look, instead of moving these two closer together, you can look at putting it here.
Yes.
And so why would you want to do that?
I'm talking about
instead of moving it over to here, why would we put it here?
One thing is it goes to the desired crossing point.
I thought you were moving it over there.
No. They're thinking of that side entrance from the parking lot, and a lot of people walk that way.
Yeah, everything will be coming here.
Oh, okay. Oh, so that's where is it now?
That's it now.
And where are you moving it to? Yeah, I'm confused.
So that's
you're moving
where
it
now?
Closer together. You're moving that one left. And I moved it to the right.
I don't know.
So many people come out of the main entrance to the library. It seems to me that there ought to be one more closer crosswalk.
Yeah, that's
why I'm
saying it's
going
to be there.
It's
going
to
stay there.
That's
there. So that's where it is now, and that's where it's been. And the one that had,
So one is not moving?
And then this one. So the first one is not moving.
The first one's not moving. I apologize about that.
You know, we were looking at six ever since I was the same size.
Okay.
And that's why I'm saying looking at the plan of yeah.
It would have been very helpful, even though you haven't hired started your design, to have had at least a concept drawing, you know, so that we could that shows the intended locations of things and the intended bump outs.
We can do that. This is
I understand, but why do that if we don't do
So what we'll do is we will
what we will do is we will shoot a better version of the plan to
that would be helpful.
Nadia and then to Derek and
okay.
And we apologize. When we provide these and they get scanned, we don't really see what the end product is. So we'll provide a digital copy via email that you can see better.
I imagine we have to approve accepting a grant. So,
is
there
one
meeting?
No, I don't think it's
not
out of this yet. No, it is
not part of it yet. No. It isn't, but we normally have to approve the grant. No, the city does not
receive
the money. Because the city doesn't. The city has a contract to do this on behalf of the city. There's no money transferred from the city to the city. So, there's no
work done.
The word grant is loose.
Got it. Lenny, would you like to finish?
Again, I just want to point out that you've got this big gap of crosswalk in the much narrower distance here, or shorter distance. This is moving over closer to this crosswalk. So you've got these two crosswalks. I don't know what Vicki said is correct or not about the 300 feet, but it just seems like we're moving these closer together and we have this big gap. I don't understand why we wouldn't consider putting it here. It is kind of like equal out the distance between the crosswalks.
We discussed it when you get into highly, areas of high section traffic. You can try to put it in, or you can try to apply the designer line. We felt very strongly in this case. If we don't match the designer line very well, we're going to,
the desire line meaning that where people want to go,
if people naturally go, whether a crosswalk is there or not.
We sat out there multiple times and we had that discussion, and then we said true safety is putting in a facility where people want to use it, not having a perfect facility where no one
wants to. Nicole, when you sat out there and watched, the people that come out the main Homer Street entrance to the library, where do they cross? In your experience.
They walk
out to the corner and they cross.
You do have like a couple coming here. But this was about this moment. And we wanted to match. Why we said this is we wanted to match.
Right, but those people actually walk to the corner and they cross at the corner, or do they hop across the street where there isn't?
I just want to cross.
But we still felt like this. Yeah, we're still going to have this, but
One other thing might help the discussion as well is the crosswalk over here at the major school bus stop. And during the summer, with all the summer camps, the crosswalk here is where they drop kids and kids are picked up for the camp. So there is a lot of rationale that goes into this with the desire to cross things and then also where the kids and the families congregate for.
Okay.
So because DOT is actually going to run the project, so we know that costs are going to be covered. So we don't have to worry about the grant coming that may not be enough.
There's no grant coming to the city.
Okay. And these lights that you described will be at both crosswalks?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. Are we pretty well set with this? Yeah, I think that might be worth it. I know. Yeah, I'll move
approval. So are you expecting a design to come back? I just want to make sure that there's no miscommunication.
I heard you say.
Yeah, we'll get the design.
Get a design drawing to us. That's roughly when will that be?
I'm
going to
send
it
out to Dan right now.
Great.
Hopefully
we'll send it. By weekend, we'll have a design here. So we'll shoot it to
something drawn that you have?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then I just have to say, please put these kinds of things in the packet because It's a thousand words, and we spent several thousand words trying to figure out what this looks like. So, okay, thank you. So we have a motion to approve. All in favor of taking the easement? There we go. Okay, unanimous. Thank you.
So Well, before you leave the Barber Grove show here, I don't want to burden everybody with more talk about Auburndale Square, but can we focus on the timing and trying to get that thing better? Because, well, it's like six cars get through coming down Lexington Street going towards Walton, and it's red again, and it's just, the timing is not right.
You don't have a chance to bring this up in time?
No, I just want to hear, we got to get back to it and figure it out.
We've had a consultant out there, we made some timing adjustments already, we'll continue to observe and make additional timing adjustments to try to mitigate the best of our ability.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to go on to the next item, which is Susanna, the mayor, requesting authorization to appropriate $350,000 bonded for the purpose of replacing the Mondo track at Newton South High School. We're joined by Josh Moore, Commissioner of Public Buildings.
Thank you very much. So I don't want to downplay this. It's a good amount of money, but of course, it's a very simple project where we are replacing a track that is now 15 years old, which is the useful life expectancy of the track. It is degrading to the point where the schools and the AD are concerned that future use might be in jeopardy from a permit standpoint. So we're at the point where we need to replace it. I have multiple prices already ranging from $290,000 to $483,500. We are in the process, literally today and tomorrow, going through, leveling all those, making sure we're comparing apples to apples, and running the cut sheets by school operations in the athletic department. They're all fairly comparable. The one thing that we're looking for on this one is something that's bike resistant. So that's big picture. It's a one-for-one swap area-wise. We rip up the old and we install new. Timing-wise, we're going to try to get started in the summer. This will roll into the fall. The schools are aware of that. We'll be coordinating that with NPS and the AD on that effort.
So this is on the CIC, and we're all expecting it, and I imagine it will go to finance with some numbers attached.
Yep, I can attach the financial proposal if you'd like that.
I don't want to speak for Lenny, but I see your hand is up, Lenny.
Is this indoor or outdoor?
Indoor, yep, in that way.
So is this going to impact the basketball court at all, or is it just the track around it?
Yeah, the track around it.
Anybody else? Questions?
The question is just in general. Maybe I've been told that the outdoor turf is coming to the end of its time. Are you going to be dealing with that at some point?
I don't believe I will, but Commissioner Derulis will be very excited about handling that project. But I'm happy to assist in any way.
Okay, are they talking about it yet?
They are talking. I have been at a number of meetings where they're talking about, they had the company come out, take a look at a couple different locations out there, gave them some pointers on filling up the seams and trying to get as much out of that as possible. I know it's not imminent at this point, but there is going to be some needs in the future on that track. So.
Okay. So we have a motion. Motion to approve. All in favor? It's unanimous.
Thank you.
We have a new Mondo track. Now, Jane, I think you're up again on the next item. 177-17 is a request for another $150,000 for public work. I'm sorry, there's two things. I'll do this one first. This is from Public Works Department's Snow and Ice Control account to the Public Works Department processing recyclable to cover the cost of removing several years' worth of soft yard waste in preparation for the solar installation. And so I saw the letter in here, but please explain why there's material that we hadn't accounted for previously, and was it already moved in for the solar, or just moved over?
So what happened up until this past year is, as we talked about in other committee meetings here, is the lease would come into the site, and the volume that came in never met the volume that went out. So we were getting more leads in and not hauling the same amount out year after year. So traditionally what's happened, at least for the last 4 to 5 years at that site, is we would get, say, a volume of 22,000 cubic yards that would come into the site and maybe haul out 15,000. So as part of the preparation for the solar project, we took a look at it. We did some calculations to determine what we thought was there and the volume. We determined it was 15,000. It ended up being 22,000 cubic yards. It's very hard to tell and do calculations on yard waste because it's not a solid material. We can go with a solid base and get a good dimensions of what's there.
So do we generate 22,000 cubic yards every year?
We don't know what we generate right now, currently. What happens there is because waste management does the pickup curbside, they give us an estimate of what they believe are in the trucks, but it's merely an estimate and it's compacted. We don't know truly what we take in each year unless we haul all of it out. When we haul it out, we haul it out and we pay by the yard. So this past season was the first time we've done that, but it was several years worth of materials. It wasn't one season. So we got it all clean slate in February, like we said we were going to do. So it was a clean slate. So this season, everything that comes in, come November, December, when we shut it down, we haul it all out, we will actually have a good, solid number of the volume that comes in truly to that site each year in yard waste. Up until this point, we don't have it because it was never tracked. Because of some of the material went to making loom, some of the material went out, so it was never tracked properly. Now that it's coming in, we're no longer doing the loom. Everything comes in, goes out. This will be our season. We will know exactly what comes in for budgetary and goes out.
Lenny, I think Juanita wanted to add to that. Can we hear from her first?
I just want to add on to what Shane said, that there's a number of factors that actually influence how much yard waste we get. If it's a dry year versus a wet year, if the material on site when we're hauling it is wet, if it's recently rained, it will compact more versus if it is very dry, it remains sloppy. So those things end up factoring into even the numbers that we have for what comes in, when it goes out, the space that it's in is different than when it's in.
Which affects price and...
It affects the amount of space in the truck.
Okay.
And that's how it does?
We're charged by volume, not by weight.
Okay. Lenny?
So I'm not sure why there's a reference to the solar installation, because the solar installation is complete, right, for the most part. I mean, the fence is up, we're done, pretty much, all right? So I'm not sure just where this has anything to do with the solar installation. So that's just one point. But I thought that we had set up a system where, you know, the happy-go-lucky farm was supposedly picking up our yard waste on a weekly basis and getting it out of there. Is that no longer the case?
No, that is what's happening. They don't do it on a weekly basis. It's Hidden Acres who has that contract. I like happy-go-lucky, though. It's Hidden Acres that takes it. With Hidden Acres, when they take it, what was happening or what was supposed to happen is it would come in to the waste management trucks, they would push it off the packers, we take our grinders, we grind it down, we windrow it, we try to ground it and get as much fluff out of it as possible, and then Hidden Acres comes in, we load the Hidden Acres trucks and haul it out. They were doing that simply to provide enough room for volume to come in. Well, now that we're in a much smaller footprint, we don't have that room to continue to do all the windrows and spread it out and let it sit on site for 8 to 9 months at a time before we haul it out. And that's how it was happening under the composting. If it would come to site, it would sit on site 6 to 9 months. It would process, and then when the volume got to be too much for what was coming in to the site, then they would pick up the phone, make the call to have Hidden Acres take it out. What we did is exactly what we promised the committee is we got it all out of there, started with a clean slate so we can truly track what comes in each year. It has a reference to the solar because even though the solar did the modification of the site,
this was the material that we were responsible for, not that this was the stuff that was coming in that we just never took off site. So this was a part of the solar to say to them, you're going to continue to take, you're going to mitigate the whole site and take all the stuff that's coming in for the season.
Do we still have a contract or a relationship with Hidden Acres?
We do, yes.
So are they coming in on a regular schedule in removing this stuff?
Yeah, or? Well, yeah, I don't know how often they're coming in. I need to speak to that currently.
Yes, so they generally come in on a weekly basis. It can depend on how much material is ground up, because that is what is in our contract with them, that the material will be processed. So it depends on staffing for how frequently enough material is ground up.
Okay, so we're not collecting it for like a whole season and then just hauling it out of
no, the back. Absolutely.
We're taking it out as frequently
as it comes in, we're taking it out. And that contract actually changes July 1st.
Are they gonna stick around? Is it working out this contract with Hidden Acres on both ends? Or are we gonna, you know, do we think that
Hidden Acres is not the vendor that will be our vendor on July 1st? Because when we put this RFP out, it was raw state material, unground material, and when the bid came in, Hidden Acres was above everyone else. So it wasn't awarded to Hidden Acres. So Hidden Acres will still be there if we need them in a pinch, but they will only take ground material. The amount they want for the unground material is like 12 to 13 bucks a cubic yard.
So we're going to have it. So the program is going to, will hopefully remain the same. But we're just going to have a different vendor.
As stuff comes in, as it comes in, we will load it, and it'll go out.
You don't ground it anymore.
It's a combination. We'll do some grinding, but we eventually will totally get out of the grinding, and we will just load it. It'll come in, we'll load it, we'll get enough for some truckloads to haul out, because we've got to let it stay on site so we have enough for a truckload, because we don't want to pay for a half a truckload. But then it goes out. So as soon as it's coming in, it's going out.
The reason I'm trying to know specifically what's happening is because this isn't a situation that we have been living with, and there's some neighbors now and they've been living with for quite a long time. And we told them that one of the pluses of the change down there is that we wouldn't be storing a lot of yard waste, and we wouldn't be having the smell and the occasional fire that happens. So I just want to make sure that I can represent the people that we're continuing to move it out. Juanita, this is as much for you, that we're continuing to move it out as quickly as we can. If it is on a weekly basis, maybe 2 weeks.
We are moving it. I'm at that site at least 3 times a week now. So I'm kind of the checks and balances even with Juanita. If I think it's getting, I call Juanita and I say, get it out of here. It's getting too much. But we are hauling it out as it comes in. We're not letting it. In our best interest to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
John
Bentley? Yes,
Mark and then
Vicki. I just want to understand what we're approving $150,000 for.
This is the overage that it cost for us because we took it all out.
This is money that's already been spent and we're now transferring it.
That's correct.
Okay. So we're just moving money around because we spent this money.
That's
already.
Correct.
Fine.
Vicki? Do we get a better deal in wet weather than we do in dry if we're not grinding it up and it's fluffier when it's dry and we're paying by volume enough by weight?
Depends on how you look at it. It's to Juanita's point, is if it comes in and it's really fluffy because we're paying by volume, in theory you're not getting as much in the truck because it's really easy, it's fluffy, whereas if it's wet and it's compressed down, you can get more in the truck. So
the answer to my question is,
yeah. We get a better deal with it. Help.
I know Juanita's coming in, I think, in 2 weeks to talk about something else. The pilot curbside waste, I think, program. But I just want to mention this, because I know you're always thinking about this long-range plan and continuing to improve on that. And I don't know when is the right time for you to come back and kind of give us an update. But a lot of us were asking along the way as this decision was being made, you know, to at some point see some kind of a
thumbnail budget for what the composting operation was costing us versus what it's costing us now. And I'm sensing that it's costing us more than we anticipated, because maybe we generate more. We don't know yet, but maybe we're generating more waste than we imagined, and what we imagined in terms of this hidden acre place and didn't kind of quite pan out. And I'd just like to have a thumbnail sort of description of the program as it actually is functioning on the ground.
We can provide a thumbnail description of how it's functioning on ground. I would be very cautious to say cost comparison to how it was functioning compared to now, because quite frankly,
it wasn't
tracked properly. And if I give you a figure, or the commissioner gives you a figure, you're going to hold us to that figure, and it may not be. So that's why we say our intent now, and the whole reason we did this, we got that site completely clean. So in February, there was nothing on that site. So if you were to go to that site right now, that is only the material that's coming this season. So we are able to track absolutely the volume that we come in this season and goes out. So November, December time frame, once we haul everything out, we'll be able to have a better discussion with this committee and with the finance committee on the true cost, because we'll have a season under our belt that we've tracked it accurately.
Okay, so maybe I want to ask this a little bit differently, and maybe it goes to Juanita and her long-term thinking towards zero waste, which is just a direction. But if we're now hauling all the city's compost, whether it's 20 or 22,000 cubic yards every year, we're paying for that, and it's costing us transportation, and we're not getting any benefit of the material that we were getting before. I know the city uses that material as well for its work. So we're hauling this away, we're buying material. I think I shouldn't have said a cost comparison to what it was, but rather a cost comparison to where we might go in the future. If we're going to entertain any level of composting for even just to serve our own purposes. So I just wanted to put that out there.
As long as we're going to like Elliott Street or someplace to reintroduce compost and
Well, I understand that there have been issues in the past, but I'll just mention this. There was a field trip to the Needham recycling station where they devote a certain area, I don't know how big it was, to a composting operation that's extremely well managed. They don't have fires. It doesn't smell. I don't know what their operation looks like, on a budget sheet, but they're very happy with it. I think in the future, hauling stuff away and then buying stuff to replace it doesn't intuitively make sense. If we could look at the numbers at some point, that would be helpful.
I will have that conversation with the commissioner and let him know of your request.
All right. We need a motion.
Motion to approve.
All right, thank you. All in favor? It's unanimous, but just one not voting. Okay. 178-17. Actually, we need to be joined by folks who are still across the
hall.
So this is to appropriate $500,000 from bonded for the purpose of funding renovations to the Newton Street Library, to include expansion of the children's room and other improvements to the first floor. And we are joined by Commissioner Moore again, and Mr. McNulty, Library Director, members of the Board of Trustees. President of the Board of Trustees, Jeff Herman, would you like to introduce the other members? Jeff, would you like to introduce the other members?
Sure. This is Dana Hansen, who's another one of the trustees of the library, and Jill Zabashi, who's the assistant librarian.
Great.
Phil.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to just let you, actually I'm going to say a couple things. So there's been a bunch of discussion about this, and as we all know, there was an item added to the CIP for $500,000 thereabouts,
facilitate a phase one of what we understand to be a longer-term plan, but to address some more serious immediate needs that the library has, particularly in the children's room. And I guess we're going to get more of what the program is this evening. There's no design. This is to get the project started. So I think what we're looking for is to put a parens on this item to vote some design money so this process can get going. And I think that's all I want to say at the moment. But we're looking to understand what they can do now in the context of a larger plan. So Josh, are you beginning this process?
Sure, yeah, I'll open it up. I think I would guess that the majority of the questions would be on your guys' end, but I'll kind of frame the discussion.
Okay.
So currently what's before you is $500,000 for short-term immediate needs at the Unisapri Library. Phase one, really the primary focus is the children's area, expansion of and renovation of, and Phil will elaborate a little more on the programmatic needs. As far as what we're asking for tonight, I think it would be in folks' best interest based on a number of conversations that we break this up as Councillor, the chair, just said. That typically what we see for design on a project is 10% to 15%. I would suggest that we ask for 15% or $75,000 to do design. It's probably a little more than I would normally need to get through kind of schematic design based on just what we're trying to tackle right now. But I think in order to have the conversation that I think everybody wants to have about the library, I think it's important that this phase of design through schematic design not only focus on vetting out what we're trying to do in this first phase, but also make sure that the design feeds into the next couple phases and ultimately what the future needs of the library are. What does that really mean? It means that when we come back, we would have a set of schematic plans for this next phase, as well as kind of a rough schematic plan for how we plan on laying out the growth floor area, all three floors over at the main library, and kind of what those moving parts are and what we're trying to accomplish short-term and long-term, as well as some building assessments, minor building assessments, condition assessments. One of the areas that I know a number of folks, and I would be remiss if I didn't say late Arthur Cohen, was near and dear, was the soffit, the overhang around the library, and the mildew. We suspect, based on recent design work over there, that it might be cosmetic, but we need to do a little more due diligence to make sure that that is, in fact, the case, and if it is, identify what the permanent solution is to make sure that, if nothing else, if it really is truly kind of aesthetic, that we address that, because it is kind of the front-facing portion of the building. So that's kind of big picture. I'll let Phil explain programmatic, and then if there's questions about, process, procurement, and how we actually make this happen, I'm happy to come back to that.
Phil? Sure. Let me set this aspect of the project in the larger context of what we're trying to do is to get the fuller picture. The challenge that we have is maximizing the utility of the existing square footage. We explored a path last year of looking at the state process, which first of all requires that you come up with an ideal library for the next 20 years minimum. And that set us on the certain path of taking a full exploration. We did the trustees approved a full building program a year ago. And that start is going to help us inform how to approach a more Newton-centric approach where we want to build what we think we need and not what is set from ultimate type of goals that would be required by the state program. So that means looking at the building, getting the best out of the existing 90,000 square feet, which is amount certainly other projects would love to be able to have. So no additions, no full gutting, where I think the largest cost of what we were looking at before was showing up. Just make strategic adjustments to the existing building, the most surgical that we can do, and get the most benefit out of those. The concept of the $500,000 allocation was to make visible progress on the most important elements that we can do immediately in a short, concise project.
the most important thing on our building program and in our needs and in the needs of the users is in the children's room. And it starts with the program space, which has 400 square feet, which is a combined craft room and sitting, storage room. It's the smallest space I've seen like that of any library that I've seen built in Massachusetts in the last, well, since I was built, probably even before. If a library felt it was big enough to build a program room, they're typically in the small ones, they're 800 to 1,000 square feet, plus a craft room. And certainly what we see in Watertown and Wellesley and Cambridge and Boston are more substantial than that, up towards 1,500 square feet. So we want to essentially rebalance the space that we've got right now. Our children's room in particular has been very much collection focused. Get a great selection of books and then leave with them. And so the libraries that are built nowadays have a lot of engagement space. They have a lot of space where a family can bring in a couple of toddlers and one that's a preschooler and a kindergartner and a second grader and really have some space where they can engage with the library and do some of these specific types of things to do. And we really want to add the spaces that can do that as well as having increased program spaces. The building program we're looking at last year would have doubled the size of the children's room. We think within the building right now, we rebalance things, we can increase the size by about 43%. And that would be by taking over a couple of adjacent areas to the children's room where it is now. And so rebalancing how we set up collections and things like that, we think that's achievable. One of the handouts that we've given to programs and services during the budget hearings, I'm not sure if that was something that got around to this group yet.
It was supposed to get to us. No, there was nothing in the package.
Okay.
But we were supposed to get that this week. But I was just mentioning it to Nadia.
I'll send it as follow-up information. I wasn't going to basically read through it. It's about three pages of items. We've really analyzed and drawn from a building program element what we think are the key things that we can focus on and get done within the envelope of the existing building. And we broke that down to sort of eight conceptual projects, which we've grouped into four what we think are groupings that can be achieved at the same time. We listed all of the building program elements from our original program. We gave weighted scores to them. We added up and we get a score, I'll just throw it in a way, it was a score of 179. So if that building got created, it would have met this goal of satisfying that one level. The existing building, we score at a 72. So we're that month's goal would be. Right now we're engaged in a project to increase our team space, move the team room, and increase the size of it, move it down to the back of the first floor, where the arc next to the cemetery is. We have a $50,000 donation in hand to do that, and we have a $50,000 donation in hand to do a major space in the library. And that project is going forward right now. Accomplishing that would get about 13 more points towards the total. This project.
I'm just going to interject for a minute because
sure.
I don't know how about anybody else, but I'm really not understanding this point system or.
Right now, I will give you the backup so you can get it in more depth, and I'm just sort of giving you a sort of comparison of the sort of perceived value we see in these projects.
Okay.
This is a fairly modest cost and modest changes. We're not really changing like any walls around there or anything like that. Project, but it's going to deliver a large part of what we were trying to achieve in terms of team service with our larger program. Almost all of it.
With your $50,000, you're not talking about this project that
correct.
Where you're
this
adding
about this
for design work. No.
Yeah, this is already on track.
Okay. It would be more helpful to me anyway to hear
just outline what the programmatic needs are that are top priorities mm-hmm. that you're going to focus on for this grant, and hopefully any other money you're going to be spending in the meantime that you have in your own budget from grants or whatever are going to dovetail and be coordinated.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get the big picture element to address that at every point of how these projects coordinate. And then we'll get specifically into what the $500,000 project can go for.
Okay. Folks, do you need any clarification before he does that?
I actually just find where we're spending the $500,000.
That's what I'm getting.
There's a lot here, and I'm thrilled that you have a couple of grants. I mean, that's fabulous. But you're coming to us for $500,000. You're actually looking only for, $75,000 for design money. Seems to me perfectly reasonable. Give us just a, 30-second, kind of 30,000-foot, what do you think that is?
We have a couple of minutes. Yeah, we want to do everything very fast.
Well, I'm trying to understand it.
Okay.
I'm supportive, so I don't need a long...
This probably is going to have probably the greatest impact of any of the soil and seeds. And I swear it was 29. So a lot of progress towards our ultimate goal. Logically, we can break it down into three steps. We're going to attack the program space first and increase that space. And basically, keep it on the home entry end of the building on that north side. And hopefully, not only the library operations normal, but operate children's room while we're doing this in some fashion. Second obvious stage is to then expand through one wall towards the atrium, the wall that separates the large front area from the children's room. And then a third phase would be to expand into the area where the archival material is now, which is at the southern end of our children's room. And we would move then children's offices down to that space.
This is not all the $500,000. This is just what you're talking about. Children's room, and phase one is this project this year.
Here's the scale. One cent.
Am I correct?
So the $500,000 will hopefully address all three of those phases. Josh and Alice and I were discussing that, and maybe not. We're going to have to get the designer in and really assess that. And the most essential part here is the final third phase, going to the archive space. That would be the most...
You're talking about the third phase as part of this $500,000.
Yeah. Can I try to clarify that a little bit?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right, so it's a little confusing because there's two different groups of phasing, if you will, here. What we're talking about today, kind of back to Mark's point, is we're asking for $75,000 to design the expansion and renovation of the children's area. There are phases within that that Phil is referring to. We're pretty confident that we can achieve all three phases with this amount of money. I'm quite confident in that. The wall that we're talking about is a non-load-bearing partition wall. That must be known. I don't want to... The other thing that we're hesitant to do is typically when we come to design funds, we don't tell you what the design is going to be because that's what the architects are for. But ultimately, we're limited by... We're not going to start blowing out exterior walls, otherwise you don't have here enough money. So there's only a few locations that we can expand. You have bathrooms, an elevator, a staircase. So there really is one wall that we can expand. We're looking to expand the library, or expand the children's area, kind of reorganize what's in it so that we can free up additional area so that we can expand the elements that Phil was referring to in the beginning. The reading area, I forget the other, the workshop area, I guess. So, that's kind of the big picture. That's all we're after tonight, though.
Okay. So, just to summarize, with this $500,000, we're going to steal $75,000 off, and we're going to do a schematic design, and then you're going to come back to it. Then you're going to have $425,000 or so left. And that's going to be enough for the construction of the first phase. Okay, I'm going to stop there. And there's questions. Everyone has questions. I had Susan and I know you all had your hands up. So I'm going to start with Susan.
Mark.
So, and then
Joe,
and then
Vicki.
Okay.
Some of us do know that the archive project wants to move. The archive project wants to move along as well. And it's going to impact what you're doing because if the archives have no place to go, then you can't move into that space.
Correct.
So I'm wondering, I just want to be sure that you know that that's on the table as well, that we can't move the archives, we can't move into the archives room until the archives have a location. So it's kind of like, a puzzle here that has to fit together.
This is why it's probably more comfortable for us to think of that as the last step of the children's project. So we can set the timing accordingly.
So we just have to assume that Marine will also find some money for the archives. That's going to be an important piece of this.
Okay. I have talked to David about that, so we're communicating.
So, remember this? So, how many square feet is it currently, the children's area?
7198.
Thank you. And how many will it be after this, hopefully?
The numbers I came up with, the 43% increase, was which I wasn't scaling, so we'll get an actual number when we get a design.
So it's it is 43% increase?
Yeah. And that would be both these areas.
Okay, and that includes updating the bathrooms and...
Yep.
Okay.
Hopefully there aren't too many code triggers in this project, but that may be one of them.
That will be one.
That's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to bring up the archives, but since you were here.
Okay.
Question that I have, I certainly understand $75,000 to do schematics, to get started on it is very reasonable, and I think that is step number one. What I would just like to understand better, if you come up with a number 500,000, I don't see any plans yet because we're just going to get started. How did you come up with 500,000 and not 400 or 600 or some other number?
Maureen.
This is how much. So, in other words, you're backing into what you can do by the amount of money that you get, as opposed to saying this is what we're going to do, and then when you figure out how much that's going
to
cost.
So you're going to design
to $500,000 as opposed to coming back to us and saying, well, we didn't quite make what we wanted to do.
Since we've been talking a lot about a long-range plan.
The way we usually do things is to know what the number is and then look to see if we can fund that number as opposed to building to a number that you...
But there isn't a long-range plan yet for approaching the library in this manner. There was a lot of work that you did to understand where we'd like to go in our wildest dreams, but now you're looking at what can you do within the footprint of what we have. And forgetting the amount of money for a minute, what I'm hoping is that by giving you 15% of the amount for design funds, that'll be enough to show us, when you're ready to show us, a schematic for the building that anticipates future library needs, changes in technology that impact space, where, you know, what we could do if we can move the archives, you know, whatever else. So we'll be looking at a whole picture, and then you're going to peel out of that the $500,000 worth of work or the $400,000 worth of work that we can do at step one. But then there's going to be a step two and a step three. So that's the other phasing Josh was talking about.
Can I clarify that question?
Yeah. Sure.
So we did that $77 million plan. I mean, is that the plan that we're aiming towards?
What we have from that process is a very solid set of goals and visions that we know we want to achieve. And we've done the analysis this year since that process then of what things elements are the most critical ones and what we think are achievable within the existing building frame. So certain things that went into the program, like, you know, a lot of extra study rooms, probably can't do without an addition. So in some certain elements of the building, we want to fill in like its own computer lab, which hopefully won't do things like that. But I think we've got a very good solid set of goals that we can have a designer work with and work towards.
So, you're not done?
This is my second question.
Barbara. Okay.
some of my more answered things about the bathrooms and all that. And then I have a very specific question. So now when you walk in to the children's room, you see two electronic checkouts, and there's electronic checkouts in the lobby, and the whole big round desk is now electronic checkouts. So my question is, when you have a more thick, tend a beautiful, handmade storybook dollhouse that you took out of the children's room, find a place back in the children's room?
We're going to be making a lot of purchases of the library as a whole, not just the children's room. We've already decided that.
But if it's all about computers, 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 and electronic checkout with computers and computers, I personally can't support it.
Can't support
more things just for more electronic things.
Okay, well, we don't have a design yet.
Our goals, particularly for the children's room, are much more engagement, personal engagement things. You know, we pretty much get what we need to get for technology in the children's room. But the extra space we want to devote are really for that very certainly in program space and engagement space that kids can actively engage with things. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about the Signal Dollhouse, which was pretty, but not an engagement type of thing.
And I disagree. I know this is not the
only
for that, but
I'm entirely. But so that sense of growth is really towards much more people space, people using space actively.
Okay.
Yeah.
You all set?
Good.
For now, Lenny?
So back to Vicki's question. So you have described what you're trying to accomplish in the children's area, and part of it is an increase of space of approximately 43%, the bathroom, and a few other things that you have described. So my expectation would be that you're going to take the $75,000 and you're going to give that to whoever's going to work on the schematics, and you're going to tell them to design something that achieves these goals. You're not going to tell them to design something and keep it within $500,000. You're going to ask whoever's doing the schematics to do it right. You're going to give them a set of goals that you want to accomplish in the children's area, and you're going to tell them to design it right. And if it's more money, you're going to come back and tell us that.
So this is the way these projects typically work. We give them those design guidelines and tell them what our budget is. The architects either laugh at us, they tell us they think you're close, or they think you're way over. Yes, it's way more money than we need, but someday. If they laugh at us, then they come right back. We've got to go to Maureen, we've got to regroup, we've got to come back here and talk about what we're trying to achieve. If they think we're close, then typically what ends up happening is they'll give us a couple different designs, one that will get us to within budget, and another one that truly meets our goals. And then it's a judgment call about, you know, what we want to do. Maybe, as opposed to $425,000 for construction, it's $500,000 for construction. And we can make those value judgments at that point.
I just want to make sure that we're going to give instructions to the designers to design it properly, at least give you that option. And then, as opposed to just trying to fit within a $425,000 construction budget, and if it ends up that you need another $100,000, you would come back to us, explain, you know, where you're at, and to truly do it right, and we'll talk about the money.
Yes, sir.
So I just don't want people thinking that they're going to design something that's less than adequate just to meet a number. Thank you.
To that point, is it premature to put the number $500,000 on this?
We're not giving $500,000.
We're going to do a parens 1, $75,000.
We're going to do a parens.
I thought it was requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $500,000 in bonded indebtedness.
We need to have a parens for this, and what we're intending to do is the design money so that they can come back to us with something we can understand as a schematic.
Okay, so we're not voting on the 500, we're voting on the 75.
Right. We're going to have a parens A, parens B. Parens A is going to be 75. Parens B for now will be 4.25 until we get more information. And that parens B could always be amended.
I'm the voice.
Okay, we're not ready yet. And we're not ready then yet either. But I'll hold on to that thought.
Thank you. So there's been some different things, expectations, I think. The chair has suggested that after the 75,000, we should maybe see what's going to happen, you know, what the future is. You mentioned the mold around the, what is it called? Okay, you mentioned that was going to be looked at, which is part of the $75,000. So that's an assessment of that?
Yes, we want to know why it's happening.
So that's a different project, really. That's not.
It is, but it wouldn't. I don't suspect you're going to see some massive set of plans and specifications for something like that. They're going to tell you what's happening, why it's happening, and what the fix is.
Okay, that just seems to me that seems like a separate project rather than the renovation of the children's room. But if that's
it is.
So, but it's also part of the $75,000.
But it's part of kind of the assessment of the overall needs of the library. So it's not going to be something that we tackle in this phase. But when we come back, we want to be able to describe, because it is a major building element that we can see there's an issue with, we want to be able to say, here's the problem, here's the solution, here's the order of magnitude. At the same time, not only are we talking about the design of this phase, but we're also going to be able to tell you the next few phases and then the future of the library, here's kind of how all the moving parts work from kind of a floor plan.
So you're going to have all of that with the 75,000.
Yes.
Okay, so we are going to get a future plan. So it's not just $75,000 for design. It's $75,000 for design, assessing the whole project and the profit.
A lot of what we're going to be doing in the first phase is a lot of programmatic work. It's going to be a lot of grabbing the floor plans and all of the different programmatic elements, what the square footages are, and what fits where, and moving things around, seeing how we can optimize the floor plan from a customer service standpoint, from a library program standpoint, from a future library program standpoint, as well as layering in infrastructure needs. It sounds like a lot to achieve, but it really, it's not, because what we're trying to come back to you with, what we will come back to you with, is not, we're not going to be specifying door closers and, you know, shag versus, well, we won't do a shag, you know what I mean, it's not going to get to that level.
Okay, so it would be, if you could, because now this is a few different things for the month, for the 70. I just want to make sure, maybe if you could just jot them down.
But
I know
heard,
it was, because I thought it was just for design for that, and now it's for that.
What
I
heard Doc say at the beginning
is
that she's recommending $75,000, which is 15% of the amount of money, a little more money than we might normally recommend,
right,
just to design the children's room, because what we need to be able to understand is how the phase one work that's the most critical programmatically for the library fits into a larger scheme. So there are a number of programmatic needs that the library has, which, as you say, you studied extensively when you were looking at, you know, the world for the building, but that you can crystallize and look at against the current floor plans,
right,
of the building. So what I would be concerned about is if we saw a detailed plan for expanding the children's area into some of the rest of the library,
right,
and we couldn't understand that, well, in the next phase, we're going to have to take some of that apart.
Right, so if we're doing a Forens A and B, the Forens A wouldn't just be for design. It would be specifically for design and
it's design
assessment.
Money, but if the first phase of design is always about programmatic assessment and looking at the existing buildings. But they're design funds, they're not construction funds. That's, I think, what we're trying to say.
But they're also assessment funds. They're also, they're not just going to the architect.
I'll give you a great example. For the Cabot School, design for the Cabot School is not just design of renovation and addition to the Cabot School. That design money evaluated the existing conditions of the cupola, the existing conditions of the masonry, Humpty Dumpty, what we're going to do with each of those elements, programmatic evaluations, traffic, parking, pedestrians, park, interfaces, light rendering, solar, I mean, it's a massive amount of stuff that
it's
all
so
part.
It's at that
part
level, it's not your regular.
It's soft cost.
Not
they're all soft.
It's 25% plan. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to just try to maybe frame a motion that would incorporate the concerns that Councilor Lappin raised and others raised. That would be helpful.
It would. I wanted to mention one other process-oriented thing, because I'm not sure this would affect the motion. So, with our, because this is really not just about the first $500,000, there's going to be more requests for more funds as the longer term plan. And we've had a lot of success with our school buildings and our fire stations having working groups so that we can understand through a process of more continuous engagement what's going on. And where we don't even have a program in front of us now, it would be helpful to have that program and understand, you know, what it is that is going to be given to the architect who's being asked to produce the schematic. What exactly are we asking of money we're suggesting? And we normally also have a project manager from the Public Buildings Department overseeing or involved and engaged in the whole thing. The program is yours, the program is the schools or the fire stations, but the process of, you know, working through the design before it comes back to us for schematic design review is important, and it's important that it works well. Susan's been on this, I don't know what it's called right now.
It's called the library working group.
Right. Okay, so I'd love to understand that there's, me personally, maybe it's just me, but I think it would be helpful to have some kind of regular communication from a working group back to the committee. That means that Susan's on the committee, so you can report back to us. Doesn't have to be that you all have to come in. On the way to getting these schematic documents done, and that you'll be assigning a project manager, if not yourself, to the project. And I guess I just wanted to put that on the table because you could misconstrue this as a small interior design project, but it's part of something much bigger. And that would also normally involve the design review committee, who give us, you know, normally just very useful input. And I know you're familiar with that process. So,
can I make that input?
Sure.
Take a shot at it?
That's
okay. So I suggest we split this into two phases with an authorization to appropriate the sum of $500,000 from bond indebtedness for the purpose of funding renovations at the Newton Free Library, rather than funding the initial phases of renovations at the Newton Free Library. And plans one would be to fund the design and other programmatic evaluation. Is that appropriate?
You can just say soft costs covers it.
Design and other soft costs to begin that work. Does that work?
Okay.
Would it be
500
less 75?
Yeah.
So it would be 425.
Right now. So it'd be, say, number one would be $75,000. Item two, then gets held.
Right.
Okay.
We can vote item one. We can vote parens A or parens one, whichever.
Just so you know, this does have to go through design review. But then, it may need to interpret the program before it goes out.
Right. And just as an aside, I think it would be helpful for the committee to see the program that you've established to date. Mm-hmm. If there is something, as I have heard it. Okay. So, any other questions before we? Okay, so we have a motion to approve parens A, which is the $75,000. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you very much.
And then a motion to hold B.
And then a motion to hold B. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you.
And Barbara has thrown down the gauntlet.
We all have our little pet peeves.
Barbara, maybe it's for sale.
Maybe, where did I cut it?
You could donate to the city council.
Yes.
We can play with it enough. Thank you all. And appreciate all your hard work.
Okay. Hold on. Don't get up yet. There's one more item on
here. You only took care of it.
No,
it's here this Monday night.
387-16? Yeah, we went to
Andy. You went to Andy Monday night.
We did.
I did. Okay.
Well done. Great job.
So why would you, I was just saying, why, if it's $500,000, right?